world's becoming a dangerous place for us women. Lipstick Bodyguard looks just like an innocent little lipstick, but it'll instantly drop any attacker to his knees so you can get away unharmed. Lipstick Bodyguard, fear no evil. Get yours today, only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
Disasters are like unexpected house guests. They show up without warning, wreak havoc when they're there, and you can never be sure when they'll finally be gone. For the elderly, disasters bring even greater challenges. This week, Diane shares tips from disaster preparedness experts to keep your parents safe when the unexpected happens.
Welcome to Parents Are Hard to Raise, helping families grow older together without losing their minds. I'm elder care expert Diane Berardi. In light of all the recent natural disasters we've been experiencing, hurricanes, earthquakes, wildfires, I wanted to just talk to you a little bit about tips, you know, to prepare your parents. But before I begin that, I just wanted to acknowledge an email I got this week from Carla from Wappinger Falls, New York. Carla explained to me that she's an accountant and she has her mom living with her. And her mom is a diabetic and also has the beginnings of dementia. And she said that right now it's her slow season, but she's going to be, you know, getting into her busy season, and she needs help for her mom. And she said that she had several different friends help her before, but now listening to the show, she had called a home care company near her. And she said to me that she wasn't sure, you know, what to do, because she talked to them and they had a nurse come out to meet with her and her mom. And she said to me, you know, they're not going to do what I want them to do. She said, you know, they want to do a care plan and I do that. I know what my mom needs and they don't want to do some of the things that I want them to do. So I want to try to answer Carla's questions as best I can. And this is a great question, because people sometimes feel that way because a home care company has to follow certain regulations. What you do with your mom in your own home is different than what we may be able to do. Now, when a home care company comes out, yes, they send a nurse out, and you, in the home care company that I recommend, you know, the nurse will come out and she wants to know what you want, but in her best way, she's going to try to make that happen. But it also has to follow, you know, be safe for your mom, be safe for whoever is coming into your home. And also, you know, we want to make sure that everything works in the way it should, and we follow the law. So Carla had mentioned to me certain things. You know, her friend, when her friends come in, her mom is a diabetic, so they're administering insulin to her mom. Now, a home care company, unless it's a nurse coming out, a home health aide cannot administer any kind of medication. They cannot test your mom, you know, finger stick her. They can't test and decide, yes, she needs insulin, yes, or no, she doesn't, or how much she needs. So in that regard, no, the nurse was absolutely correct. You know, the nurse setting up that care plan wants to hear what you need and what you want. Some people don't want their parents bathed, for instance, where if you come out of the hospital and a Medicare certified agency comes in, that's one of the guidelines. That first hour, they have to bathe your mom. And that's on every visit. Well, for a home care company coming in, you know, where you don't want that done, you know, on a private basis, you don't want that done maybe every visit. Well, that's okay. But, you know, administering medications, a home care company cannot do that unless a nurse is doing that. Another question you raised, Carla, was you have steps where your mom is upstairs, you know, and she's has dementia, and you want the home health aide to bring her downstairs. Now, you said, you know, that you follow, you know, you tell your mom, okay, you come down the steps, and you kind of come down the steps backwards, and your mom holds on to your shoulder, and you're guiding her down. That isn't the safest way for a home care company, for you, or a home care company to come in and do that. And the nurse was right in saying to you, we have to come up with a different solution. Because, first of all, anyone who might have difficulty walking, now your mom may physically be able to walk, but with dementia, you don't know how she's going to react. You don't know how she's going to react with a stranger doing it. You can't have, a home health worker walking backwards down the steps and your mom holding on and coming down, because we don't know how your mom's going to react, number one. We don't know if your mom suddenly stops, is going to fall. They'll both tumble down the steps. There's a lot of safety issues. So we're going to look at the home, you know, environment, and we're going to say to you, no, that's not safe, or yes, that is, or yes, we can do that, or maybe it's not safe, but maybe we can work around that. Maybe we can figure a different solution. Maybe we can make a bedroom for your mom downstairs, you know, and this way she doesn't have to come down those steps. So there are a lot of different things we can do, but because this home care agency presented things to you that you may not be doing now, it doesn't mean they're not reputable, or it doesn't mean they don't want to cooperate. So that's a great question. And I know people do hesitate, you know, hiring a home care company, possibly because they're thinking, well, they're not going to do what I want. But there's reasons for that. And that nurse should explain those reasons to you. You know, she just can't we don't want someone to come in and say immediately, no, we can't do that, you know, but we need to explain why. And they should be looking for other options that are good for you and good for your mom, so that the problem can be solved. So I hope I've answered that question for you, Carla. And I hope I've answered that for other people who, you know, have those considerations. So, you know, that's one big thing. And that's a tough one. But there are ways to get around those medications, you know. So, but it takes some work. And it takes some give and take, you know, on both parts, coming up with suggestions. The nurse can suggest different things. So we just, you know, if you're calling someone and they're not listening, or they're not, you know, saying, well, this, we can't do that, but let's, you know, maybe we can do this. That's what you need. And that's what you want, because every situation has similarities, but every situation is a little different. So you want to work with a company who tells you what, you know, can be done, maybe in the scope of the licensed person, but also let's come up with some suggestions. So Mother Nature's mad at us, it seems. All the devastating hurricanes and earthquakes and wildfires, you know, the government tells us, in lieu of what happened with Hurricane Sandy, happened Hurricane Katrina, you know, we have to be responsible. We have to start being responsible for ourselves and our families. And of course, we're going to rely on the community and the government and you know, the National Weather Service. But we want to make a plan for ourselves first. And there's, I've talked to a number of disaster planning experts, and I'm just going to tell you a few things, you know, that I've learned over the years, but we're going to have links to the sites that they recommend on our website. So I just want to assure you of that. You know, our parents, being the age they are, they've probably lived through and experienced more than one disaster. But there's certain aspects of the aging process that makes them more vulnerable during a disaster, especially if they have one or more chronic illnesses, or, you know, physical limitations, or dementia. So, you know, we have to try to prepare and work a plan with them. You know, if even if you live in the area or maybe you live in the same state, you still want to work up a plan with them. If you live out of state, you live out of the country, when you come to visit, you want to work a plan with them. Or, you know, maybe you don't get here that often, so there has to be some people they can rely on that can work up a plan with them, and you want to test the plan. And you know, no matter how much we plan and how much we prepare, things are going to go wrong. Things are going to happen that, you know, even our communities, our state and local government, things do happen. So we want to be prepared as best we can. And it does help our parents if they know that, you know, they'll be a little bit calmer if they know, okay, I know what to do, or, you know, Betty's going to come and check on me, or these are the things that are going to happen. So they'll feel a little more comfortable and more secure just knowing that, okay, they know certain things that they have to do. And, you know, we have emergencies that happen quickly without warning. So, you know, they may force your parents to be confined to their home, or they may be forced to evacuate from their home or from their neighborhood. So we want to prepare for both those situations, whether they have to stay at home or they're forced to evacuate. And, you know, even if you live close by or maybe in the same state, you may not be able to get there. You know, or and typically the relief workers can't get there right away. So there's certain things that you want to prepare for. Of course, disaster planners tell us that we should prepare for those two different instances. So we want to prepare if they have to stay in place for a period of time. And when you prepare for that, they tell you to have a 2-week supply, and you're going to be preparing items, you know, food, different items. And what a good thing to do is put them in plastic containers that are on wheels and in a certain area of your home. And then you're going to prepare if they have to evacuate, and they're going to have something, a smaller version to take with them to prepare for a minimum of 72 hours to be away. Something lightweight, if it's a backpack, if they can, a duffel bag, or something smaller on wheels. And you want to keep those kits, you know, in a place where they know they can just grab. If they have a walker, a wheelchair, a cane, make sure it has their name and address on it and their phone number. You know, even if your parent can, maybe your parent has arthritis and they just use a cane, but I suggest to people to get a travel wheelchair. They're lightweight, and just have that and have it somewhere where you know where it is, label it, you know, with your parent's information. Your parent may never use it, but in a disaster, if they're evacuated, you know, what if they have to go to a shelter? What if they have to stand online for a long period of time? They may not be able to do that. So you can have that, you know, you have it there. Like I said, you may never use it, but it's something that is good to keep in mind, because if they do have to stand in line and they can't, you know, you don't think about things like that. In these packets that you're making up, these basic needs and supplies, you have to check them every 6 months, check for expirations. You're going to be replacing food, water, batteries. You're going to be refreshing medication and other perishables. And you can use those items, you know, in your home before you're going to, you know, and put new ones into the packets, supplies that you're going to be making. Of course, water, and they tell you 1 gallon per person per day. A 3-day supply for evacuation and a 2-week supply if you're going to be, you know, preparing to stay home and in place. Food, of course, you want it, food that's easy to get to, food that's not perishable. Again, a 3-day minimum for evacuation, 2-day supply for your home. Something that's easily opened and that they can open. LED flashlight with extra batteries. I tell everybody, whether you're packing these flashlights for leaving, you know, in your evacuation bag or your supplies in your home, just for your parent in their home as it is, as they live each day, put an LED flashlight in every room and attach a whistle to that flashlight. You can attach it. Usually, you know, the flashlight has a cord. Attach a whistle. Keep that in every room in their home, the bathroom, the bedroom, the kitchen. You know, if they have a sometimes people have a sunroom, you know, dining room, whatever rooms they live in, any of the rooms, because wherever they are, they might be caught, you know, where somebody has to come and find them. They might need a flashlight. They may have to whistle and somebody could find them. They may have fallen, whatever. So that's a good idea anyway. A battery operated or hand crank radio, first aid kit, medications. If you can, a minimum of a 7-day supply, and I'm going to give you a little trick for medications. Always ask your pharmacist and your doctor what you can do in case of, you know, a disaster that you need extra medications. Everything goes by computer today, but if your doctor can give them a copy of their prescription, you know, that they can keep, I'm going to tell you, you know, keep everything in a plastic bag, and they're going to take that with them, which... but also, you know, you want to ask them, how do you get an extra supply? Now, I'm going to give you a little trick. A lot of insurance companies, including Medicare Part D, they allow prescriptions usually to be refilled in 25 days. Now, your pharmacist will know that. They're going to know if that's okay. So if you refill it 5 days earlier, you can build up an extra supply. So you're going to have that extra supply. And if you do that, you know, every month, you'll have some extra, and your pharmacist is going to know whether you can do that with your insurance company or not. But a lot of them do allow you to do that. You want to have also a multi-purpose tool, a wrench or pliers to turn off the gas or water if you have to, a plastic bag, garbage bags for sanitation and ties if you have to have temporary toileting, toilet paper, moist towelettes for toileting or for, you know, bathing if you have to. Paper wipes, paper towels, copies of your personal documents, your power of attorney, your insurance cards, your medication list, your medical information, your birth certificates, deeds to your home. Keep them in plastic bags, and keep them, you know, have different copies, copy in that go bag and copy in your 2-week supply kit. Take pictures of, on your cell phone, you can take pictures of all and keep all this identification that way as well. And you want to have your cell phone and, of course, extra batteries and your phone charger with you. Cash and coins, because ATMs may not be accessible. Emergency blanket, maps of the local area, plastic sheeting and duct tape if you have to shelter in place, a dust mask, change of clothing, manual can opener. If you have a pet, you're going to have to find out ahead of time, ask your vet, what do I do with my pet? Because if you have to go to a shelter, a lot of shelters don't allow pets to come in. An extra set of keys, keep them in a plastic bag. And when we come back from the break, we're going to continue on that list. I want to tell you about my friend Katie. Katie is a nurse, and she was attacked on her way home from work. She was totally taken by surprise, and although Katie is only 5 feet tall and 106 pounds, she was easily able to drop her 6'4", 250-pound attacker to his knees and get away unharmed. Katie wasn't just lucky that day. She was prepared. In her pocketbook, a harmless-looking lipstick, which really contained a powerful man-stopping aerosol propellant. It's not like it was in our grandmother's day. Today, just going to and from work or to the mall can have tragic consequences. The FBI says a violent crime is committed every 15 seconds in the United States, and a forcible rape happens every 5 minutes. And chances are, when something happens, no one will be around to help. It looks just like a lipstick, so no one will suspect a thing, which is important since experts say getting the jump on your attacker is all about the element of surprise. Inside this innocent-looking lipstick is the same powerful stuff used by police and the military to disarm even the most powerful armed aggressor. In fact, National Park Rangers use the very same formula that's inside this little lipstick to stop 2,000-pound vicious grizzly bears dead in their tracks. It's like carrying a personal bodyguard with you, in your purse or your pocket. Darkness brings danger. Muggers and rapists use darkness to their advantage. We all know what it's like to be walking at night and hear footsteps coming at us from behind. Who's there? If it's somebody bad, will you be protected? Your life may depend on it. My friend Katie's close call needs to be a wake-up call for all of us, myself included. Pick up a lipstick bodyguard and keep it with you always.
Lipstick Bodyguard, fear no evil. Get yours today, only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
I know I'm giving you a whole huge list of things, and don't worry about writing it down, and don't worry about it, because we'll have a comprehensive list of what you should have on our website, so don't worry about that. Another item, hand sanitizers, baby wipes, because you can bathe with them. You can use them for anything, baby wipes, and every new mom knows. Cold climate supplies, jacket, long pants, long sleeve shirt, sturdy shoes, hat, mitten, scarf, sleeping bag, or warm blanket. And then you're going to need supplies for your vehicle, and that'll be on our website. Now, if your mom or dad is on oxygen or any other medical equipment that requires electricity, you have to talk about as soon as they get on that, as soon as they're put on oxygen or any other equipment, or if they are on it and you weren't aware of it, you have to talk to their provider who provides that, because you have to find out, what do we do in an emergency? What do we do in a power failure? Also, your local police department, you can let them know, and you let the power company know, this is my mom, Mary Smith, she lives at this address, she is on 24-hour oxygen, so she cannot be without that oxygen. So that's something. If you go for regular treatments like dialysis, you have to talk to the place that you go for dialysis, and they will instruct you and tell you what to do. If you can, an extra pair of glasses, hearing aid batteries, a wheelchair battery, have an extra one, because these are things you might not, think about if you have a powered wheelchair. So you have to make a plan with your parents. You have to look at their abilities, their limitations, and you have to think of, the best thing you're going to do. Now, in Hurricane Sandy, I know I had a lot of clients where, of course, we were told, we were, of course, fortunate that in that instance, there's warnings. So, you hear about the warning. So we had a lot of people who maybe were able to come and get their parent and, be with them and get them before maybe it was going to hit in a certain area. But you don't know. What if you can't get to them? So you also have to know where they live. A lot of assisted livings, retirement communities, they all have plans. You want to find out, what type of plan they have. Are escape routes wheelchair accessible? What if you have to make sure always, I tell people, always leave your walker in the same place, because we have people who, I don't know where I left my walker, where's your walker? Always leave it in the same place. Of course, if possible, have two, one at your bedside, one, left in right by your door. That's a good place, right out of where you're going. You're leaving your home, your apartment, wherever, even in your assisted living, if you can. So this way you have it there. You're not panicked. Where's my walker? I can't get out of bed. you have to practice whatever evacuation routes, whatever plans, you have to practice them. You know, how are you going to get to a shelter if you had to get to a shelter? So these are all things. If you have a pet or a service animal, a lot of shelters don't allow that. So ask your vet where can my pet go? Is there a pet-friendly hotel? I know in Hurricane Sandy I had a client, she went to a hotel. You know, she was able to do that and she was able to bring her pet. So there's all kinds of, you know, preparation. And you want to know that ahead of time. So you're not left to, fend in an emergency. Know how to turn off your water, your gas, your electricity. Make sure, you know, your windows, that they're not painted shut. You know, sometimes people never check, but their windows are painted shut and then they can't open their windows. So that's something you need to check on. Then another important thing you have to prepare a personal support network. You know, who is going to check on you? Who is going to get you out of the house? You make a minimum of three people, family, neighbors, coworkers, caregivers, friends. So who is going to make sure that you're okay? Who's going to check on you before, during, after? Who's going to, you know, be able to communicate for you if that needs to be? Exchange important keys. Show them where emergency supplies are kept. Go through the evacuation plan. How are we going to contact everybody? Oh, well, I'm just, you know, if people go over to me, oh, well, my phone doesn't work. I'm going to use the cell phone. What if the cell towers are down? You know, in Hurricane Sandy, those cell towers were down. Oh, well, I'll just email her. You're not going to be able to email her, you know, if there's no power. So you have to figure out, how am I going to communicate if the phones don't work? If you have a neighbor, a lot of people, especially in retirement communities, they have a neighbor. I know with my parents, where they are, they're still in the neighborhood that I grew up in. And a lot of people, a lot of homes have turned over to younger people. But those younger people always are checking on my parents, which is a wonderful thing. So, you know, there's different support networks that you want to know and you want to have. Also, always notify each other when you're going away, you're going out of town and you're coming back, so that they don't worry about you. They don't know what happened to you. You know, we run into that a lot sometimes. Sometimes I'll get a call and say, we can't get into the home, you know, so what's going on? You know, so, and I know, oh, she's away. She's at her daughter's, but she didn't notify, you know, maybe her neighbor, one of her people that's on her list in an emergency. I tell people, get a lockbox, you know, especially for, you know, your mom or dad. Get a lockbox and put a key in there. And you can notify the police with that combination. So in an emergency, you know, because if you have, let's say your mom is wheelchair bound and, you know, what's going to happen? They can't get in. And in an emergency like that, they're struggling to get into that home. You know, they have to knock down the door. So here you have a lockbox with a key. And of course, her buddy is going to have a key, but you also want to notify the police of that. So that's something. A lot of local neighborhood emergency teams, so they can also advise you. You can let them know your plan and they can say to you, yeah, but let's think about this and let's do this also. Also, a big thing in a fire, you know, you have to get your parent, you have to tell them and their buddy, their neighbor, they have to get out before they call 911. You have to get out of the home before you're going to call 911. And a lot of fires, you know, with the elderly happen when cooking. They forget that maybe there's something on the stove. I tell my mom same thing, because if I tell you, my mom said to me one day in the same week, I forgot that I was cooking something and I burned something twice. Oh my gosh, if I didn't go in there, we would have had a fire. And my mom is not, you know, does not have a dementia, you know, condition. She's not diagnosed with any of that, but she's, you know, she's 88 years old. So you forget, you put something on the stove, you go into another room. So I always tell people, get them a timer, a portable timer. And every time they cook, put that timer on so that, you know, they hear. they tell you in your home, for each room you're in, there should be two escape routes for each room. So that's, you want to plan for a fire as well. So, but most important, don't sit there and try to put it out and get on the phone while you're in the house. You get out of the house. Don't try to put it out. Get out of the house and you call 911. So I know I've given you a lot of information, but don't worry, all this information will be on our website. So you have to, so the most important thing, get together with your parents, make a plan, make that small go bag for 3 days, make that larger, you know, if they have to stay in place, shelter in place, that emergency things that they need, food, water, etc., have contacts, that's the next thing. And then practice the plan, because you have to practice. They have to practice if there's an emergency, at least twice a year, if not more. So how are we going to remember when to do all these things? Well, a good time to remember, I always tell people, is when twice a year, you know, when you set your clocks forward and when you set your clocks back, that's a good time to go over your evacuation plans, go over your drills, your fire drills, change your smoke alarm batteries. They say test those batteries every month if you can. If you can't do it, if your parent can't do it, whenever you come down or up or wherever you visit, test them, but then change those batteries twice a year, and that's an easy way to remember. So, my survival tip of the week, eat more veggies, and that could lower your stress level. So the next time you're feeling stressed out, try reaching for a salad. There was a study of more than 60,000 Australians age 45 and older who found that eating more fruits and veggies could help keep stress at bay. Overall, people who ate between 5 and 7 servings of fruits and vegetables each day had a 14% lower risk for stress, compared with those who only ate 1 serving or less a day. And women in particular, who ate 5 to 7 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, had a 23% lower risk of stress over people who only ate 1 serving or less. So eating fruits and vegetables isn't only good for our body, but it's good for our mind as well. So what am I going to tell you to do today? Go and eat a salad. If this week's show was helpful to you, or you know someone who would be helped by it, please tell them about it. They can subscribe to the show using iTunes. You can find links to the topics we just talked about in the show notes for today's episode, episode 26 at parentsarehardtoraise.org. I'm here to help you, so please tell me if there's something you're struggling with, and I'll try my best to include it in a future show. Email me at diane@parentsarehardtoraise.org. You can reach me through my website, dianeberardi.com. You can follow me on Facebook at Parents Are Hard to Raise, and I tweet at Jersey Elder Care. Parents Are Hard to Raise is a Counterthink Media production. The music used in this broadcast was managed by Cosmo Music, LLC, New York, New York, under license of Broadcast Music, Incorporated. Thank you so much for listening. See you again next week.